From December 2018 until September 2019, approximately, I had a weekly radio show on Radio Best Music on RadioAnime.com. It's a story unto itself how I suspect Pentagon took it down, but not relevant here. This recording is one of those shows, and I hope you enjoy. This is Radio Best Music on RadioAnime.com. I am Guy Ellis. In my last episode, I was beginning to touch on the subject of the covenant. A covenant is sometimes used when, for example, a certain state make covenants between themselves, for example, a defense covenant, for example, or a trade covenant. Sometimes multinational conglomerates do the same thing. Sometimes there is a discussion of a social covenant. Often that refers to an unwritten agreement in between the nation, or in between ethnicities in a nation. Covenant can mean many things, but it more or less means a consensus on how to view and conduct, how to view the world and how to conduct ourselves and other things, how to arrive at conclusions and maybe arbitration and so forth and so on, which hitherto has been undefined and just based on common sense and now has been put into some kind of verification, for example, into a document or hewn into a stone or something else. I apologize for sounds from my dogs in the background. One of my dogs is, for example, having a snack. And there is often some interruptions when I'm recording my shows here in my home. Sometimes from the dogs, sometimes from people driving by or planes flying overhead or me having a smoke. I mentioned this many times, but I make a particular defense line, so to speak. I have nothing to sell. I am very religious, or I'd rather say very spiritual. A lot of people are convinced that those who are interested in spirituality or faith have no interest or knowledge of science. I don't even debate that because it's so obvious that I'm very interested in science, and most spiritual people that I've met are very interested in science. You can convince yourself of anything. But that I adopt the raw format is the defense line. Everybody who is trying to convince you of something or seduce you into a group or a community or collectivity or some political agreement or into the right wing or the left wing or into some spirituality, for example, they're taking great care that they have good equipment, that they dress nicely, they prepare their speech, they print out notes, they refine their projection in the world in order to make it easier for them to affect people's perceptions. I make it absolutely clear that though I am very spiritual and I often refer to myself as a prophet of God, particularly when I am with that hat on, so to speak. And I am aware that a lot of people don't really know what that means. They are so used to preachers and gurus and teachers and influencers and trendsetters. I'm none of those things. None of the prophets of the past were any of these things. If you would research sacred scriptures of past times, You will discover that whenever a prophet appeared in history, he was always in opposition to the preachers and the elites. Always. There is no exception to this. It was only after the prophet had died or stopped teaching or giving his messages that the priests started quoting him and using him in the scriptures, and usually after having applied some lost in translation bits when they wrote down the messages. Furthermore, if you do research into the work of all prophets of monotheism, you will discover that none of them wrote down their messages. It was always the spoken word. Always. To take the latest prophet, as far as we know, Muhammad, he was illiterate. He wrote nothing, and he gave no instructions that the Holy Quran should be written down. It was many decades after his death that a caliph in Baghdad, who was trying to create a regime, who had it written down, and it took many years to refine it. And you have no means of verifying today what may have become lost in translation. And it has been part of my work as a prophet to reveal some of the lost in translation bits which have appeared, for example, in the Bible. That doesn't mean that I want you to believe anything. Priests usually want you to believe what they talk about. Prophets don't. Prophets do only two things. They fight against idolatry everywhere where they can. And they do it by exposing it and testifying about it. And secondly, they promote as much as they possibly can your awareness that you can yourself speak directly to the creator of our universe and allow him to become your truth. And they remind you that once you achieve that state of mind, there is no other truth. But whether you go that path or not is entirely up to you. I can give you information, yes. I can give you my opinion, yes. But what you do with it is your business and yours alone. The relationship between you and the creator of our universe is the business of you and him. No one else can come in between in that equation. Three's a crowd. This is part of the reason why I make it so prevalent, and I so often remind of it in all my shows and also in my YouTube recordings and more or less everywhere where I have something to say or feel that I have something to say, that I have nothing to sell. And I have nothing to gain from what I'm doing. I believe that it is important that certain things that I have come to realize are spoken of. But often those things are hidden as pearls behind a lot of things that I talk about. Monotheism respects other people's worldviews. Always. That's how simple it is. We don't believe in using propaganda or deceptions to hypnotize and snare people into our flock. It is only by safeguarding your mind and spirit and be diligent and being active, even in your silent quiet. Well, silent quiet, in your silent stillness, is where you find the crooked path which leads to monotheism. it is far more interesting to sit in a cave high up in a mountain and watch all the people around, having left some seeds here and there, to see if they find good ground or not. It's far more rewarding to see that than to do what more or less all power blocks have done, at least for the past 7,000 years, to hypnotize and ensnare people or coerce them or even push them into some collectivities and worldviews and flocks and states and stuff, or ideological constructs. You see, what is a covenant? In my last show, I mentioned the secret meeting between Churchill and Roosevelt in the North Atlantic on board a battleship, where they decided what is the democratic power block. You never voted for that. In the same meeting, Winston Churchill, who had convinced the most powerful empire we've ever seen on the planet, the British Empire, he had convinced the empire that they didn't have the ability to produce steel or oil or food. That's not logical. They controlled between 20 and 30% of the planet. He had convinced his state and the rest of the so-called free world that they needed the USA steel and food and things. And Roosevelt said, yes, okay, we'll feed you, we'll give you steel, we'll bankrupt you. It suited very well the American Jew, the Maynoothist, Winston Churchill, because his ambition was to destroy the British Empire. Just look at all his works and you can see how he never failed to try. And it's like nobody at this time saw what he was doing. What a joke. When Roosevelt agreed, Roosevelt said, yes, but you have to give me collateral. And Winston Churchill gave to the USA between 15 and 20 British harbours. You know, I mentioned, for example, the Britain had occupied Iceland illegally a year earlier. It was handed over in that meeting. Iceland, the whole nation state of Iceland, was handed over in this secret meeting to Roosevelt. And they immediately reoccupied Iceland by illegal invasion of the US. Bahamas and many other places where the British Empire had their harbors for their naval empire for a couple of centuries was just handed over to the US of A, and it has never been returned. You see, history is full of humor. That was part of their covenant. How to create an empire through secret meetings. You would say never won any victories in World War II. Or did they? Well, possibly they defeated the Japanese. This is part one of my discussion about a covenant. I am Guy Ellis. I'll be back with you shortly. This is Radio Best Music on RadioNomi.com. I am Guy Ellis. This is part two of my discussion about a covenant. In my last show, I began mentioning the covenant in the Bible. If you listen to people in Christianity, they often talk about kingdom of God or kingdom of heaven. I often talk about the divine state. It took me a while to find out how to differentiate between what the Christian people talk about and what I talk about, because both are quoting the Bible, or so it can't be understood. It is not uncommon that people in the Islamic world talk about a Khalifa. But the Khalifa was introduced by a Masonic Caliph in Baghdad, decades after the death of the Prophet. The Khalifa is a concept for the Kingdom of Solomon, who was a Freemason who built the first temple. Temple of Freemasonry, when Freemasonry began destroying monotheism. Well, destroying the Hebrew version of monotheism. 2 centuries after that destruction, there emerged a new religion called Judaism, which claims to be the continuation of Hebrews, but is not. It's a completely new religion when it was formed, just like Christianity was a completely new religion when that was formed. There is no continuation of Hebraism. Hebraism was utterly destroyed and has never re-emerged, and there is no continuation of it. It was a divine creed, divine judgment, that Hebraism was destroyed. And the reason is very simple. The covenant for the divine state was agreed to by people who, after that, called themselves Hebrews. When they allowed the first and second temple of Solomon, and when they allowed to create a kingdom, when they selected Saul as king, and later David, and later Solomon, they more or less rejected the divine covenant of the divine state. This is why they were destroyed. That doesn't mean that the covenant has been destroyed. You can participate in the covenant, as I have, for example, accepted to be a subject of the divine state. I'm not saying that you should. You're saying that you could if you wanted to. Because the covenant of the divine state is complete. But what I'm trying to do in this show, and what I'm building up to, is to show you that the Masons, who more or less control modern world and has been fighting for 7,000 years to take complete control of the world, they know precisely what a covenant is, and they know very well that it is very dangerous for them if you understand what a divine covenant is. This is why they want you to read about the Ten Commandments and not the Divine Covenant. When you read chapter 20 of Exodus, which is the second book of Moses in the Bible, when you understand the covenant for what it is, you will not see the 11 commandments, which are usually referred to as 10 commandments, you will not see them as commandments. Because they are not commandments to humanity. They are simply creeds within the covenant. If you accept the covenant, if you become a subject of the divine state, the 11 commandments, because the 11th commandment has now been revealed, become part of what you do and how you conduct yourself as part of that covenant. What is your part in the covenant? Covenant usually means two or more parties who are all equally responsible for carrying it out. Part of this covenant is that you don't fight for your state anymore. God does. When Yeshua, son of Nun, or Yehoshua, son of Nun, a prophet who was trained by Moses, when he conquered the Palestinian area for the Hebrews, he never did so with force of arms. What? Well, he did, sometimes, not always. But he always made sure that when he used arms, it wasn't his force which won victories. I only have to remind you of how he took Jericho. He took down the walls of Jericho by sound of trumpets. I mention that as an example. Yehoshua, son of Nun, made sure that when he conquered Palestine, it was the divine power which fought for him and on his behalf. And when he died, and in his last his last talks before he died, where he advised the Sanhedrin of Hebraism on how to rule the land, he reminded them, the moment you begin to fight for the state, you will lose the covenant. And if you lose the covenant, you will be condemned. And this is the history of monotheism since its birth. If you accept a covenant with God and then you later reject it, you will be condemned. You will suffer consequences. This is one of the reasons that monotheists don't try to seduce people into their fold. They know that it's a very serious business because it's not about joining a group. It's about joining a covenant between you and God exclusively. The covenant isn't made with a group. The covenant is a suggestion to any individual who wishes to join with it. Again, we don't know what a covenant is. We don't know what a state of mind is. As Hegel, this great philosopher Hegel, explained in his work, more or less all states, in one way or another, represent the state of mind of the people who are within it. And he was explaining something that Martin Luther understood and Cardinal Richelieu understood, and which Henry Kissinger understands very well, and partly as explained in his book World Order. When you are in a position to modify, coerce, and shape people's state of mind, you will shape it into a power block. And the power of Freemasonry has always been based on doing this covertly, one way or another. And they have been masters of creating a power regime all around the world and yet stay under a cloak of invisibility. It's a remarkable feat. And it's amazing that even people who know this find it very difficult to see through that cloak. But Freemasonry, it hasn't always referred to itself as Freemasonry. It has only referred to itself by that name since 1717. Periodically, this secret society changes names because it's not the society itself. It's a group of people who have a covenant denoting the use of certain secret rituals. They can transfer the knowledge of those secret rituals to other societies, and they do so often. They, for example, were planning 3 years ago to begin a transfer of these secret rituals to the Druid secret society. That may be failing, which means that they will create a different secret society. It's not about the society, it's about the rituals of empowerment, which are made by certain covenants. This is one of the reasons that it's very important that you do not understand the nature of a covenant and how it substitutes or is in direct relation to what a state of mind is and how to work with a state of mind. For example, a monotheist works with a state of mind by reason, argumenting, testifying, and making a stand for certain things. And his work is mainly a work of faith. But informed faith, well, mostly. Complicated in its simplicity. At this time, when the covenant of the divine state was formed, it was put into an ark called the Ark of the Covenant, not the Ark of the Ten Commandments. And when Hebraism was destroyed, approximately 500 years before Jesus, the Ark of the Covenant disappeared. When the newly formed religion of Judaism, which was formed in Babylon, almost 2 centuries later, when Judaism got a license from a Persian king, not from God, but from a Persian king, when they got a license to go back to Palestine and build the second temple, which is a Masonic thing, They said in their scriptures that they took the Ark of the Covenant with themselves from Babylon back to Jerusalem. When Jesus died on the cross, or lost consciousness on the cross around the year 40, the huge shroud in the temple was torn in part, revealing that there was no Ark of the Covenant. It's an interesting thing, because if the Ark of the Covenant really existed, then what became of it? There are many stories about it, because a lot of people, they say that, well, the looters, they took the jewels and sold them. No, it doesn't stand to reason. People in those times didn't think that way. Armies in those days didn't loot and divide the loot. Armies were better organized than that. The loot was always given to the military commander or the king. And in those days, things of treasure, like the Ark of the Covenant, were considered too valuable as an object that wouldn't have been taken apart. They would have guarded it very closely with only the most trusted guards. That's how people did things. They still do. It is my belief that the Ark of the Covenant still exists, and I know for a fact that Freemasonry believes so also, and has been trying for many centuries to find it. Because if you have the Ark of the Covenant, and if people would understand what that means, then what kind of regime or a powerhouse could you rebuild with it? This is one of the biggest mysteries of all times. What is the divine state? What is the covenant? And what is the Ark of the Covenant? It's a mystery which I cannot solve. But I'm one of the few peoples on the planet today, or and through the centuries, who has discovered what this mystery actually is. And I have many times explained it. And I have more to say about it. But not today. This is Guy Ellis. This is on Radio Best Music on RadioAnomie.com. God bless.